Hello and welcome to the That's Not My Age podcast. I'm Alison Walsh, a journalist, author and blogger, and I'd like to invite you to join this conversation about life and style and getting older. Today I'm talking to Lynn Slater, a polymath, a cultural influencer, model, writer, professor, content creator, and now an author. Hope you enjoy the episode. Hello, Lynn.
Alison, hello. Thanks for having me.
So welcome and congratulations on your new book, How to Be Old, which is part manifesto, part memoir, would you say?
I think it's really more of a memoir. I think originally it was being thought of as a how-to book, but as I was writing it, it really became much more of a memoir.
Yes, it's mostly about a decade, isn't it? Kind of the ups and downs of your 60s, your seventh decade.
Yes, when the accidental icon appeared and now has left the stage.
Oh yes, I'm going to talk to you all about this. Just to sort of talk about the book a little bit, you said you always wanted to be a writer, so how does it feel to to have a book out there that's garnering lots of attention?
It feels incredible. It feels so good to be 70 years old and to still have very exciting things happen for you.
Yeah.
And to sort of have an opportunity for something that I had always wanted but never had time in my busy, crazy life to do. It's really, really exciting. And I think for me, now the hard work begins because, you know, this book did have a lot of help from Accidental Icon to get into the world, and now I have to sort of write and have my writing stand on its own. Mm-hmm. So that's my new challenge for this decade.
Yes, yes. And I like how in your book you talk about, rather than age, you don't focus on age, you focus on opportunity and adventure and looking forward to sort of what's coming ahead. Have you seen your book in a bookstore yet?
I did for the very first time last week. Calvin and I were in New York City.
That is such a moment, isn't it, when you actually see your book there on the shelf in a store. To me, it felt slightly like a bit of an out-of-body moment. I couldn't quite believe that was, you know, there was my book next to lots of other sort of, you know, brilliant fashion books. So how did you feel seeing your book?
It was like a moment of like cognitive dissonance, you know, sort of, I guess what it reminded me of, to be honest, is sort of some of the moments that I had when I was Accidental Icon, and it was so unbelievable to me what had happened to me that I was like, is this real? And I think I had a similar moment when I saw that book on the shelf.
Mm-hmm. And so, and writing your book, we kind of just spoke about you've been at home writing during the pandemic and after the pandemic, and you've moved, and now you're on this big promotional tour. I mean, how is that? You've kind of had this sort of like quite quiet life. You've sort of stepped back, and now you're really in the limelight again. How does that feel?
Very mixed feelings.
I bet.
Very, very, very mixed feelings. And, you know, this is so interesting is, you know, now that I'm sort of visible again, I'm having all of these brands and, you know, other people coming up and sending me emails about dressing me for these events and styling me for these events, and I'm starting to get emails to do sponsorships.
No.
And so I've really very much want people to know about the book, to see the book, but I don't want to be accidental icon again. Mm-hmm. And so I have been making decisions to wear my own clothes to big events. I was on a TV show yesterday and everybody was like, let us dress you. And I just decided I'm gonna wear my own clothes, and I wore my own clothes to the book launch. And I think it's an important sort of thing for me to do so that I stay grounded in this life that I've created, which I really love and is not in the bigger spotlight.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I always feel better and more relaxed in my own clothes anyway. I kind of, you know, that's it. But, it's, you know, I'd much rather, and you know, when you're being interviewed or you're on TV or whatever, it's kind of, I'd rather feel comfortable and relaxed than sort of like a bit dressed up and not like me.
Right. And it feels to me when I'm doing that, like I'm back in the beginning of when I first started Accidental Icon, when I did not know anything and it was a journey of exploration and it was so much fun and it was creative and I was wearing my own clothes. And so I think when I moved into that phase where I was not wearing my own clothes is, you know, I talk about it in the book, is when I started to lose my authenticity. And so I had a very big event at the New York Public Library the day of the book launch, and I was in conversation with another writer and everyone was saying, oh, what are you gonna wear? And I went back to sort of the beginning and I wore some Yoji Yamamoto pants I had gotten in a vintage store with suspenders, a denim shirt, and a little Comme des Garçons cropped denim jacket that I also had in like 2014. And I just wore that. And it was very comfortable and just perfect for that moment.
So in How to Be Old, you write about this journey of like becoming an influencer and how you began to lose yourself and how you had, you know, it blew up and you had loads of attention from brands. You were flown around the world, offered loads of money, ended up with an apartment full of clothes. And now but then you became burnt out and you've de-influenced yourself.
Yes.
How are you going to make sure you don't get pulled back in now you kind of hot property again?
Well, I think because I have gone through the process, right, of recovering my values and remembering why I started Accidental Icon to begin with, which really was, you know, Allison, I'm curious also to hear what you think of this, but I found that I came onto the scene when it was sort of blogging was still what you did. And so for me, I started Accidental Icon because I wanted to write, and I wanted to write differently than I had in academic writing. And I was writing and researching designers and pieces of clothing and writing about it on my blog. And when I was doing that, it felt like a very creative act. And I felt like when blogging sort of went away and everything started to happen on Instagram, that is when I really... That and when I retired from teaching is when I sort of lost myself, because I had really was just living on Instagram.
Yeah. When I first started blogging, I was anonymous, and it was just sort of quite nice just to, you know, you had the freedom, you could write and say what you like. After being on magazines for years and writing in a house style, I sort of had the freedom to sort of, it was more relaxed, I could say what I thought, you know, I didn't have an editor breathing down my neck or whatever. Yeah, I think Instagram sort of changed everything, didn't it? And now TikTok, because I was just, And it was only when my first book came out, one of my friends who's a photographer said, you need to be more visible, you need to sort of show your face kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like very reluctant. I was like, oh no, because I'm used to being behind the scenes, you know, being the fashion editor, editing, you know, styling photo shoots, interviewing people, not being the one in the limelight, in the center of attention. So yeah, it is a shift. And it was quite interesting, isn't it? It's like you talked about, you like kind of, you're separating yourself now. You aren't accidental icon. She was a character or a role you played, like you, but not you.
Right.
And that's what happens with Instagram, I think. You become, you know, it's just like this tiny picture and it's not you. There's an element of you, but it is a construct for social media, isn't it?
It certainly is. And I think, you know, that's one of the challenges now that I'm kind of working on, and I'm trying to think of it as a creative challenge, is how do I remain connected with this community that I have on Instagram, many of whom have followed me from the very early days, without, you know, being in that loop of, oh, I have to post, or, you know, sort of the way that it's been for the book promotion. You know, I had gone from posting something maybe every 3 weeks to having to post every day.
Yeah.
And that has been something that I want to stop.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the challenge becomes, or even the question, is there now room on Instagram to do anything that might capture people's attention for more than a second, or that has some kind of meaning, when every other sort of thing that comes up on your scrolling is an advertisement?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just like all about marketing, isn't it now? It's not.
It has completely changed. And in the early days, like 2014, when I first started using it, it did not have advertising. It was just a lot of people sharing their creativity and letting a lot of people into the fashion world, as blogging did, who were not allowed to be in it by the old gatekeepers of the big, you know, Vogue and sort of fashion magazines. And I think that those early bloggers kind of opened the door for someone like me to come in to fashion. It was just the right time. And now I think, you know, it's a very different scene, fashion, very different.
Yeah. You said recently that I think online it was around when you posted about wearing your favorite denim jacket at your book launch. I think you said rather than sort of being accidental icon, dressing up as accidental icon, you're a digital creature no more. What does that mean? Are you thinking of going offline, off grid?
Well, it is in my mind.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, to some extent now, if you are a writer, which I discovered during this process, that you are expected to have some sort of a platform. And so the question that I'm thinking about now is, what will that platform be? And so I have started writing on Substack, and one of the big things that I want to do when all of this, you know, book related craziness is done, is really think about, you know, how can I make that a meaningful platform that will support the community I have and that I have been getting from the way that I am now talking about being old.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are many writers on Substack who have supported me And there's writers on Instagram that have supported me. I basically, through Instagram and my relationships that I made with writers on Instagram, you know, they graciously gave me blurbs for the book. They've been so supportive and posting. So it's really, you know, a hard thing to think about. Like, as a writer, where do you want to be?
Yeah.
You know, where do you want to live now? And so, I think I want my words to be what people sort of care about rather than my photo.
Yeah, yeah. So, How to Be Old sort of came from, as we just mentioned, sort of Instagram and your website, the blog Accidental Icon. And initially you said it was about style and creativity and identity, but then it's become about age. I wonder if you can kind of tell us a little bit about that transformation.
So I think when I first started my blog, I was not really thinking about age. And I noticed when I was doing my research about blogs at that time that there were blogs by some older women who were talking about older women exclusively. And then there were blogs by younger women that were talking to younger women exclusively. And I could not find myself in either. You know, there were a couple that seemed to do some bridging, like I think Man Repeller and Garance Door. They seem to have a wider door across age. But my original intent was just to engage women, regardless of age, who like to think about and talk about fashion. You know, not looking at what should I wear when I travel somewhere or that sort of thing. And so for me, it was not really about age at all. And as I became more visible, sort of the media and, you know, the press started to make it be about my age, right? And so the articles would be, oh, look at this 61-year-old who, you know, is doing well in social media and technology. Oh, what a surprise. You know, look at this 64-year-old who just got a modeling contract. Oh, what an amazing surprise. She's old and she's doing this. So I started to be positioned as this sort of poster child for, you know, this is how you should be old. And I remember there was this famous Chinese influencer named Go-Go Boy, and he wrote an article about how I could be sort of this prototype for Chinese women to think about being older. And I had like just so many followers from China and a lot of, you know, articles on Weibo and some of their platforms. And so I became this way that, you know, the society was saying, this is how you should be when you're old, but without defining or noting the privilege that I had in being old the way that I was being old. And so I had a confrontation after I had done this commercial. And it was really the first time, this commercial was the first time I was in middle America. I was known more internationally, and I was known more, you know, on both coasts, but not at all in everyday America. And this commercial kind of brought me into everyday America because it was on every cable station. And I am very, you know, cavalierly stomping around saying age is just an illusion. And a lot of women started to send emails to me, make comments, and they were really very angry and confronting me about making that statement, because for them, in their life, it was not an illusion. It made their life very hard for a number of reasons. And so that was sort of the beginning of these red flags that started popping up for me. And looking back, you know, one of the great things about writing a memoir is it gives you the opportunity to reflect on the past and make sense of it. And one of the big things I realized was up until 2019, I was still teaching full time and still teaching social work. And so I think as long as I was doing that, it was sort of balancing the, you know, one foot was in the real world and the other foot was in this fantasy world of accidental icon. And I made a decision to stop teaching and do accidental icon full time. And I see now that is when I really lost touch with who I am, you know, what my values were, and I just started to work almost exclusively on Instagram, and that was really sort of, this commercial was part of that, and so the red flags started popping up, and I realized I was getting really burnt out, and this is not why I had done this. You know, it was to be creative, it was to write. I was doing no writing. I wasn't writing on my blog, wasn't writing anywhere. And so I was quite miserable right before the pandemic, and then the pandemic hit. And then that really gave me the space to step back and see what had happened to me, who I wanted to be, and to sort of reconnect with these values that I had kind of lost sight of.
If you could go back now, what advice would you give to Accidental Icon pre-pandemic?
Well, you know what? I think for me, I had very personal reasons why it was so seductive, because, you know, and this is something I think if you are becoming a famous older influencer, I think I was very vulnerable because I had always had jobs that didn't have pensions or opportunities to really save for retirement, because I was living paycheck to paycheck as a social worker in New York City. And so I think for me, being in my 60s and, you know, I have enough, but I'm falling, my fixed income is not exorbitant, put it that way. And so having this obscene amount of money, you know, dangled in front of your eyes in your 60s when you're healthy and you're worried about, am I going to be able to fund myself, you know, especially now with longevity. My mother lived until 95. I think it made me vulnerable to it. And so my advice goes back to young people. Like, stop being afraid of being old. And really think about who you want to be as an older woman, because it, you know, I'm 70 publishing a book, right? That's a great thing. But if you have this vision of who you want to be when you are a young woman, who you want to be as an older woman, you can do the things for your health and also for your financial, even if it's saving, you know, $5 a week. Or don't spend $50 on face creams that aren't gonna, at the end of the day, do anything for you. You're still gonna get wrinkles. that you will actually have more control over how you will be old if you prepare for it when you are young.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to you about this because I know you get lots of, you receive lots of messages from younger women, and it's not surprising, is it, that people have a fear of getting older when we live in such an ageist society, and you know, it's like you're not allowed to look old. We're sold this sort of false narrative, aren't we?
Yes.
But as you say, we have a choice about this, and also, you know, aging does, choice about how we think about it, and aging doesn't have to be about, I know it also, you've mentioned privilege, but it, aging doesn't have to be about decline, like you know, it can be about opportunity.
Right. And I think right now, I think when you and I were sort of out there, we needed to be very, very positive about aging because there, because of ageism, and there were no images out there of sort of what positive aging could look like. But I think now we have gone too far.
Yeah.
And I think you have these two opposite poles, which one is that vision of aging as disability and decline and dementia and dependency, and you're so needy, you're ruining it for all the generations behind you. But then now we have this other person who's appearing, and she is generally thin, fit, and white, highly resourced, doing everything, like running a marathon when she's 85, just sort of totally independent, needing nothing from anyone. And I think that's very dangerous because the vast majority of us are in the middle. Those two extremes are about 3% of older people or retirees on either end. And there's like this invisible middle, and it's the place where getting older has some lovely things about it, but it has some challenges.
Yeah.
And I think if we don't show what that is like, that we will not get policies, we will not get innovations that will support the life of all of us in the middle. And I put myself in the middle now.
Yeah.
Because that's where I am. I'm on a fixed income. And I think the young, there are now starting to be a lot of younger women who are saying, ugh, these youth and beauty standards are so exhausting for me. I'm spending all my money and all my labor and hours trying to meet it. And I think if we're showing these women, these older women who, let's face it, to have bodies like that, I don't know about you, my metabolism is in the mud, but to, you know, you're working 3 or 4 hours on that body.
Yeah.
And and I think that older woman is saying to these younger women, you know, oh, it's never over, honey. If you want to be accepted and part of society, you have to look like this. So keep working, and you'll continue to work on it till the day you die. And so I think the middle has to have honest conversations that this is what it's really like. And what's been interesting, I've been talking with a lot of young journalists, and some of them want to really break through this fear of age. And they've been asking me like very interesting questions. Like one of them asked me, you know, you're 70 now, do you think about dying a lot? And it's not, you know, what kind of lipstick do you wear? It's it's like big, heavy questions. And you know, the answer again, it's in the middle. Yes, there are moments where you wake up and you have this foreboding. But more often, what it does for me is it makes me just deeply committed to living every moment I have to the fullest, which makes your life wonderful. So I think those are the conversations that we as older women need to be having with younger women and helping them envision, you know, this older self where you can do the things that maybe you had to put aside when you were working and doing your career and having a family and being a partner and, you know, not having time for that special part of yourself that you had wanted to come out.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think we are role models, aren't we, for younger women, and it's on us to try and shift the dial. But one thing I wanted to talk to you about was, because you feel like with this whole age thing and the visibility thing, you feel like kind of it's shifted, it's moved on a little bit, but not a great deal, and it doesn't feel linear. It feels like it's up and down, kind of. And like, how, you know, I feel like, do we have to keep banging on about this? Do we have to keep pushing back against ageism and prejudice?
Yeah, and I think if you talk to people from other groups, you know, I have a lot of women friends who are Black, that yes, this is how it happens. That you make some strides and then society wants to double back and make sure you are in your place. I mean, as women right now, particularly in our country right now, we are in grave danger.
Yeah.
And so I think, yes, it's true. And I think, again, there is now, I mean, recently I've been commenting because there's all this big hoopla now because a few older, gorgeous white women appeared frequently in Paris fashion shows.
Yeah.
And everybody's going, oh, it's so wonderful. But it's all of the same sort of women, the tall, the white, the thin, you know, who clearly based on, you know, again, that is the standard. And so I've kind of come to this place where I'm no longer going to expect fashion to be inclusive. I'm not going to even think that it should be. And I think in the old days, before fashion was owned by conglomerates, and it was amazing designers, and I'm thinking of Alexander McQueen, who we've all been thinking about, it was about newness, it was about innovation, it was about inspiration. Now it is about buying.
Mm.
And so I think for me, if we go back to this time when it was an inspiration, not an aspiration, it's sort of like, I don't want to look at a fashion show and be scanning it to think about, oh, is there someone who looks like me in the fashion show?
Yeah.
That distracts from the garment, right? And so I think we should look at the places where inclusion is really important. What conversations do we as older women want to be in ways that significantly are going to change our daily life and support all of us, no matter where we are in terms of income or race or sexuality. And those are the conversations, rather than, oh, are there models that look like us in fashion, right? And you know, when I look at the clothes, like I remember there was a Prada fashion show, and all I could think of was, oh, look at these women, they're traveling. And they had little compasses hanging off their belts and things like that. And I at that time, I felt like, oh, I want to be a traveling woman. But I didn't need to buy Prada. I didn't need to be thin and beautiful. I just needed to look in my closet and have some imagination, or go to a thrift store and get, you know, some pieces I could attach to a belt or whatever. So that's where I'm landing now about fashion and inclusivity, is where's the conversations outside of fashion that we really need to be seen and we need to have loud voices in.
And I like what you say about being seen and how important it is. Not, and it's not just about appearance, it's not lookism, it's about being valued and respected for your work and the contribution you've made to society. So
exactly, not how you look.
Yeah.
Because all of that is being rewarded for how you look.
Yeah, yeah. I was reading an interview with Kim Gordon, and she's got a new album, and a bit like you, actually. She's got a new album, a new solo album out. She's 70, and she's like, TikTokers are going crazy and saying things like she's cured their fear of aging, and it's quite similar to your sort of what you know your book's out. Similar age, the last decade you've had quite, these changes.
Yes, and I think in the beginning of Accidental Icon, like, there was that year that Joan Didion was in the Celine ad, and then I was in the Valentino Eyewear ad. And to me, that was a moment. That was a transgressive moment.
Yeah.
Because you had never seen women like us.
Yeah.
Attached to a brand like that. And then, as you said, it sort of, that was when a lot of younger women were like writing me and just saying, wow, we can still be, it wasn't that we could be pretty or thin. It was, we could be cool, we could be a professor, we could be a writer, we could be these very dynamic older women. And I think that's what they're seeing in Kim Gordon.
Yeah.
That your creativity and your productivity is not going to drain away. That you can still do creative things when you're 70, when you're 80. And that is appealing.
Yeah, yeah. I like that she said, I mean, it was something like, it didn't occur to me that I'd be seen as cool because I'm 70.
Right. Well, it's the same thing. I wore sunglasses because I was terrified of having my photo taken. But it became this thing, oh, she's just so cool. She has sunglasses and she doesn't smile. But it was all because of my fear and insecurity about being seen. You know, I was very ambivalent about it.
Yeah. Oh, good. It just reminded me of the early days of That's Not My Age. And I kind of, my friend had said, you have to be seen. And I just get Mr. That's Not My Age to take a picture of me in the bathroom and chop my head off. So it's just like, they're just like this buddy in our bathroom with like the clothes on. And he'd have to sit in the bath because we live in a flat in London and it's small, and that was the only kind of clear wall we had, and he'd have to be sitting in the bath taking a picture of me, and I mean, like, just chop the head off, or, you know, I'd be in the distance and, like you said, wearing sunglasses or something. It's like, it's not about me.
Right. There's a strong ambivalence about it, right? Because I think all of us have a part that does want to be seen. But then when you are seen, there's a whole lot of other stuff that come along with it. A lot of demands and expectations.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
One of my favorite chapters in the book is the last one. And I think, is it called Let the Old Become New Again? And it's when you are... you've moved to Peekskill, you're in your house and you're gardening and seeing your grandchildren and living near your daughter, and there's a real sense of calmness after that, such a busy decade.
Yes.
And it felt to me like a kind of different way of writing than to what you'd done before. I don't know, do you feel like that you've got more freedom?
I feel it's a completely different kind of writing. And because I think I've made the commitment to being a writer. And I think that was my initial idea, that I'm going to write in a blog in a way that's different than all the rules that are on me when I write for academia. And then it sort of took on a life of its own, and the writing became very secondary. And I think it was not only the recovery of my values over the pandemic, it was the recovery of my delight and sort of pleasure in writing. And that's when I began to start writing again in a very different way.
Yeah.
And writing about things other than fashion. And so I think now that is alongside with partner and grandmother and my other identities, that writer is what feels very sort of, it makes me feel coherent. Mm-hmm. And I think I recently started to write a monthly column for our local newspaper, which is just delightful because I'm becoming very involved in our little local community. And so I think it's sort of an acceptance of an identity that had been elusive, that I had kept returning to back and forth throughout my entire life. Like, I can't even tell you how many creative writing classes I've taken since I was 30, and never could quite sort of grab onto it. So I think that was the gift that I did get from stopping, was that I'm giving myself the pleasure and the freedom to explore that part of my identity.
Mm-hmm. So what have you learned from writing the book?
That's a good question. That maybe I'm just going to write essays.
You don't have a plan to write another book?
I don't at the moment. I really don't. I think, as I read back over the book, which now it's such a long time between when you write something and when it gets out in the world in the form of a book, that there's so many sort of themes that I could elaborate and so many things that I want to talk about now. Mm. And so I think, I found this sort of form of, they call it the braided essay or the hybrid essay, mm-hmm. where you're using your personal story to enter into a larger conversation. And I really like that form because I was a professor for 20 years and always, living in school, which was my happy place. And so I can incorporate the good part of doing research and talking about larger issues, but I can incorporate this creative part, which is the creative writing part of the hybrid essay. And so I think, it also, when you're writing an essay, and, I'll have to go through the angst of submitting it and all of that, but I think I won't have to promote it.
Oh, God. And you're only just at the start of this. I can empathize because it just, I don't know, with me, it just got to the point where I felt like everyone wanted a piece of me.
Yeah, well, and you can't write. You have no time to write.
No, and you're exhausted and broken.
Yes, I just want to get back to having a morning where I can get up, get my coffee. It's getting warm now. I can go out in the back to my writing shed that Calvin built for me for my 70th birthday.
Oh.
And just be writing. And that is what is the most frustrating part about all the promotional activities. Mm-hmm. It really takes you away from your life.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it's sort of like, it's like you spoke about the kind of how Accidental Icon is separate from you. That's like an avatar, a character.
Yes.
The kind of the actually being a writer and being in your shed and then doing the promotional, there's a sort of split there as well, isn't there? Kind of, there's a difference between you as a writer and then you as, like, you know
the
you
have promoter
to, yeah basically. Because it is down to you as well. This is what I learned very naively. I thought I'd written the book and that was it, job done. But no way. It's down to you to organize the book launch, the drinks for the launch, promote it online, invite the guests.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, unless you're already being reviewed, you know, by the big newspapers, you know, it's sort of on your dime also.
yeah, exactly.
So, you know, again, I'm on a fixed income. I'm thinking very carefully about how I'm spending every dollar at the moment. And, you know, I want to go and travel and have Calvin and I sort of go somewhere and maybe live there for a month and write and have a new experience that will inform my writing. And, you know, that's where I want to spend my money.
Yeah, yeah, come to London.
I want to.
You should do. What I really like is you constantly reinvent yourself, and you talk about this in your book and how each, you know, you don't think about age, but you think about each of your birthdays is a sort of new opportunity, and you call it what nowness.
Mm-hmm.
So what now?
Well, I'm in the what now.
Yeah.
Right? And I love, that's actually my favorite part.
Yeah.
When you are putting yourself into new and different experiences and you are seeing what opportunities might be there without having a goal or an intention. Because I think when you have a goal and you're very directed, that it's almost like you've got blinders on and you don't see those real nice little things that are along the periphery that could be very exciting. And so I am, you know, like this weekend is an event that I'm, to be honest, everyone was very excited about this TV appearance, and I'm like, not. but what I'm really excited about is that I've been asked to participate in a book festival and talk on a panel this weekend. And to me, that is dying and going to heaven right now. So, that is an experience. I want to immerse myself in these experiences, talking with other writers, doing things that are going to stimulate my mind to be able to come up with some really different ideas and then sit down and write about them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still, there's things to figure out, like my Substack, for example, it's all free subscribers at the moment. And if I do convert to a paid subscription, I'm now thinking about, well, what would be the value to my readers? What kinds of things could I offer that would make it worth it for them to pay the extra beyond the, you know, essay that I'm writing now? And so that's kind of fun because you can be creative with that. I think I've gotten several offers now from these travel companies that sort of reach out to influencers and they want the influencer to create an experience, and then they handle all the travel. But I'm kind of toying with the idea of, well, if you let me do a workshop on sort of, you know, writing a memoir, because I do hear from a lot of women that it's something that they want to do in their older life, and we're doing it in Tuscany, that could that could kind of be a fun experience, but it would have to be not that, you know, I'm going to do some fashion thing, but that it would be a real experience that I could create for women who are writing to me and who are wanting to do a memoir, and sort of what that would be, a creative project. Like, where would you go that could stimulate memoir writing? How might you use photographs? How might you, you know, sort of use nature? And then thinking of experiences that would stimulate, you know, memories and sort of the creative writing of that you do when you're writing a memoir.
I'll come.
those are like the what now ideas that I'm kind of flirting with.
And I'm into that. I'll come to Tuscany.
Well, maybe I can do one in England or Ireland, or, you know. Ooh. I want to go to Ireland because I'm Irish and I've never been.
Walsh is an Irish name, but I don't really know that much about my ancestry. I should look into that.
Yeah.
And I've only been a couple of times, so go to Ireland as well.
Yeah, because, you know, my mom is Dutch, and I went to Amsterdam and had just a very, very incredible and emotional experience, because, you know, my mom had always told us that her grandparents had owned a hotel and a cafe in Amsterdam. And my mother had a tendency to exaggerate, so we never believed her. But when I went to the hotel and I said, you know, well, I've been told that my great grandparent, you know, August Vollmer, sort of had an association with this hotel. The guy says, oh, he takes me upstairs to this room, and there's two massive oil paintings of my great-grandfather and great-grandmother. And the hotel is now owned by the Hard Rock, but there's a cafe that's part of it that is glorious. Just the most intriguing, fabulous, incredible design. I found out a lot of the history because it was featured in this book written by an architect about just very, you know, stunning and important bars and cafes in Europe. And it was so emotional for me. Because that cafe had been like this hub of creativity. All of the intellectuals and the architects and the writers in Amsterdam used to go and hang out there in like the early 1900s. So it was so, I think I decided to write a book when I was sitting in that cafe.
Wow, you'd come home.
Yeah, so I'm thinking maybe I'll have a similar experience in Ireland.
Yeah. Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, and then maybe there'll be a different memoir that comes out about that.
Yeah, you know what? I did like the personal bits in your book, the story, the stuff about you and your family, and you and Calvin as well. My favorite photo is the one at the end with you and Calvin sitting together. You know, you just look very happy and relaxed, a bit cheeky.
Yep, that's us. We'll always be a bit cheeky. That won't go away.
Oh, good, 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 good. Right, now I'm going to ask you, I always do a sort of quick fire round of questions at the end that I ask all my guests. So I'm exhausted. How tired are you?
Right now, bone tired. I've been running all over the place for the last week, doing a lot of, you know, going to Washington, D.C., a lot of things in the city. I'm tired today.
Ah, well, put your feet up and have a rest because you've got the book festival coming up at the weekend.
Yes.
What would you say the best thing is about getting older?
I would say the best thing about getting older for me, I just had this really big moment a few weeks ago in the midst of all this promotion, and it was, I had this realization that I've been striving my entire life, and I had this moment where I just gave it up, and I actually felt quite exhausted because the full toll of the striving kind of came into my body. But it was just the most glorious moment that I don't have to do anything for anybody to prove anything to anyone, that I've done that work and I can just give that up and just be.
Oh. Do you think that you feel that now your book's out, and is it related to that?
I think it is related to it, because as you asked me earlier, you know, all of this promotion and now being back in the public eye, it's already starting. My inbox is full of, you know, do you want to collab and do you want to do this? And I think that if I hadn't given up the striving, that it might have been tempting. Mm. But giving that up, it just allows me to just say no thank you and just stay in the life that I have.
Mm-hmm. What are you reading right now? Do you have time to read?
Well, in between on train rides and things like that, I just read Leslie Jameson's new book out called Splinters, which is about her divorce. I've been a little bit obsessed with Debra Levy.
Oh my God, she's brilliant!
I just finished reading Cost of Living because I had become intrigued by real estate, and so I had gotten that. And then once I read that, I was like, okay, I have to read the other ones in this series.
Yeah. So have you read all three?
I have one more to read.
Yeah. I love how she writes. I kind of think, oh, wish I could do that.
It's so immediate.
Yeah.
It comes from her observation of an everyday object. Right, it's not like some big glamorous thing, it's like, you know, a pair of shoes or you know, a colorful cloth that's thrown over the back of her chair. And that engages her into writing about something much bigger. So I've been studying her, because, you know, now the work begins. I have to really start showing I have some chops as a writer. The little accidental icon tailwind is done, so.
Well, I think, Debra Levy, that's a good place to start, and she is a brilliant, brilliant writer.
She really is. She really, really is, yeah.
And what are you watching on TV?
You know what? I've been watching, bizarrely, but a lot of Korean TV shows on Netflix. Better stories. Like I just noticed there's so many sort of TV shows and movies and even writing about you know, trauma and people being very crazy and self-destructive, and I'm living in the real world. There's enough of that happening around me right now. So for TV, I want something different. And, you know, some of these shows are actually really, really, the storytelling is good. It's a different culture. So that's what I've kind of been obsessed with.
Well, Korean film is really having a moment, isn't it? I mean, some of the best films I've seen over the last few years, like Past Lives. And what about food or drink? What's your favorite food and drink?
Well, water. Because I have realized as I've gotten older that I can get dehydrated much easier than in the past. So I have to... I drink a lot of water. I like different kinds of tea. And I do love my cup of coffee.
Oh, so, me too.
those are my drinks. I think my food is, we've been trying to eat healthily and a more plant-based kind of diet.
Yeah.
And so now also it's spring, it's like fruits and fresh vegetables are my favorite. But, you know, I'm always going to default to that occasional bag of chips.
Yeah. Fresh vegetables grown in your garden.
Yes, some of them. I have a big herb garden. So that makes me happy. We use all my herbs for our cooking.
Okay. I know you are no longer Accidental Icon, but I just want you to talk me through your outfit and what you're wearing today.
Oh, most days? Well, today I'm wearing exercise pants on the bottom because I have other interviews, and a very loose Acne Studios shirt from my old wardrobe. That has a flower print, sneakers usually, and that's kind of, you know, my everyday outfit now is like jeans. I love the sweatshirt, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
You know what I aside from the fact that it says old, which I adore about it, but I love the neckline on it.
Yeah.
It makes it special from other sweatshirts.
I think the neckline is really important. I can't stand things that are really high around your neck. It's got to kind of be just right. And that is kind of, you know, a slightly wider shape, isn't it? But not too wide.
Not too wide. And then it makes it hang from the shoulders in a really nice way.
Mm-hmm. Lynn, by the way, is talking about the That's Not My Age old sweatshirt, just to be clear, and get that in. I've got a special question for you, this an exclusive question just for you. What would you say to your older self?
Just keep on having your what nows.
Yeah, I'm into the what now-ness. What now-ness.
Yes, it's such a fun space to play in.
Keep on having your what nows. I like it.
Yes, because then you're always reinventing, which is hopeful. It's future-oriented.
Yeah.
And I've been telling my family lately that they should be prepared because I'll probably reinvent my death in some way. I'm already talking to them about... You know, all these new kinds of burials where you can become a tree. Your organic material supports the growth of a tree.
Oh, wow.
So I'll be reinventing all the way out.
Oh, I like that. Keep on reinventing. Okay, last question. What's the single most important piece of advice you've ever been given?
To have no regret. That regret is a really unproductive emotion.
Mm-hmm.
because you can never go back and you can never change the past. So it's really kind of worthless to spend time on that.
Yeah. And it's sort of, it takes up a lot of energy.
It does.
Lynn, thank you. I feel like I've used up a lot of your energy.
No, you have not. Because when you're in conversation with someone, when it's reciprocal, you're both giving and receiving energy. So I have received energy from you today.
Ah, great. Well, thank you so much for finding the time to talk to me today. Really appreciate it because I know how busy your schedule is. So thank you, Lynn.
Thank you, Allison, for having me.
It's been a pleasure.
Same.